How's my mic? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, perfect, man. How are you?
Good. Thanks. How are you?
Doing well. Let's just get this out of the way in the beginning. Is it Ellis? Elise? How do I say it?
Ellis. That's right.
Ellis. Okay. That's what I was going to say the whole time. All right. Perfect. Perfect. We're gonna have a good little space tonight. I gave Robo Magobo the co-host. And then of course we'll have Max from Archway, and I don't know, is Cryptopital going to come, or is way too early for him? Right, it's like 5 a.m. over there.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's too late for him, but maybe he can catch the next one.
Yeah, I could definitely get him. I'm going to have one that's more accommodating to EU time zones in a couple of weeks, so I'll definitely reach out and get him over here. How you doing, Max?
Nice, yeah, I'd love to be on.
What's up, everybody?
Hey, Max, how's it going?
Going good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, right. Long time. And it appears that the space is working this time around.
I think we're gonna go with it. I mean, if the space works, I'm the last one that's gonna complain, because it's like a 2 out of 3 shot usually. So we'll take it.
Yeah, we weren't having much luck earlier today, I tell you that. And that was on multiple spaces.
Oh, man. I bought an iPhone like 3 months ago, because supposedly they work much better with Twitter compared to Android. And it does. Like the iPhone, I think, makes a little bit of a difference. But I just don't like the iPhone very much. I miss my old phone.
I will say, once you get it, what iPhone did you get? Do you like the 14 or...
I got the 13 Pro.
Okay. So it's a bit of a learning curve, I'd say, if you're used to having like a home button, but you get pretty used to it. I mean, I think the iPhone's pretty solid, but I understand why people like the Android. I think it's a little more customizable.
Yeah, it's customizable, a little more intuitive, and like the autocorrect on the Android, I don't know what it is. It just works so good for me. And on the iPhone, I'm definitely going to wrap my car up, send it a text message, like fixing my own corrections.
I hear you on that one. I can give you that one for sure. That one gets to me.
I think Robo Magobo is rugging a little bit, but I'm going to invite him up again, and then hopefully it works and we can get started. Is that Robo? Oh, okay. I could hear you. I just can't see you up here. But as long as you could hear us and we could hear you, we'll go with that. Oh no, I'm more of a computer person myself, but I'll I got like a headset so I could have my hands free with the cell phone on the space. But you know, happy to have you, man. It's nice to chat. Yeah, no problem. I think you know, when I talked to Cryptopital from Ellis Network, and he told me what they were about, I said, you know what, this would be a good opportunity to talk about shared security versus sovereign chain. And this will be the second project that I got to talk to that's going to use partial set security, which I think is really opens up a lot of interesting options for the hub. And then all the way on the other side of the spectrum, we've got Archway, which went the sovereign chain route, probably could have been a consumer chain. And you know, Archway launched in like a terrible market condition. So like it was probably, maybe that option was on the table, who knows? But they're the opposite. So we'll get perspectives from both. Obviously, we'll look at the trade-offs and what each chain is doing to kind of optimize their situation in the ecosystem. And hopefully the audience gets just a lot of information about these blockchains and possibly where they're headed and what projects on them are going to be most appealing for the end users. Sound good?
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. All right. Let's get a working definition for partial set security first. So maybe Ellis Network, you can go over like just like a basics. And then, of course, if anyone in the audience has questions, you know, in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, I'll open it up. But yeah, why don't we start with partial set security, what that looks like?
All right. Thanks, Joe. Yeah. So I'll try to put this in kind of like very general terms, because the actual details of partial set security are still actually being finalized, and we're going to roll out a test net. And then once that test net's completed, we'll be able to launch.
That's okay.
But the, yeah, so the big differences here are, if you're familiar with interchain security, it's replicated security, right? So you are getting the entire validator set of the Cosmos ecosystem securing your chain. So you're getting the full, you know, whatever that value of Atom is, what is the stake value today, 3 billion or 4 billion? I don't know the exact number looking at it. I'd have to take a look at it. But for a chain that's looking for just maybe that's a smaller size chain that's not looking for the full set, partial set security is a great new tool that's available to chains like ours that are launching at a much smaller size that only need a little bit of that validator set. So there's a couple of options within the partial set security design. One is called top N, and the other is an opt-in method. But those will basically allow you to right size your chain and select the number of validators that you would like to have at a minimum for your chain. And there should be a feature also to have a maximum, although that's not that's currently still being designed. So for us, maybe an optimum validator set for Ellis Network might be, let's say, 60 to 80, right? I'm just throwing that number out there because we use 80, 82 for our testnet right now. So we don't need all 180 Cosmos validators. So with that in mind, it's actually a really great tool, because now you'll be able to onboard so many more chains that want to launch and use this, replicated security, but they can't really get the whole set. And what it allows for the Cosmos validators themselves is the, sorry, I'm hearing some noise in the background, so I'm trying to figure out what that was. What it allows...
Sorry about that. I just actually rugged. I rugged and I came back on, but I think we're good now.
Oh, okay. You're back. Okay. What it allows for the Cosmos validators themselves is it allows them to choose which chains they want to validate for. So let's say 50 more chains or 100 more chains launch on partial set security. Now you can have like some validators validating for maybe like 20 of those, and some validators validating for another 25. So it's a really great way for the validators themselves to express their interest in specific chains, or try to see if they can get some revenue share or inflation share from those chains. So I hope that explained it. It's kind of, you know, it's there's going to be a lot more coming out, coming from Informal Systems and Haifa and the Cosmos Hub. But I hope I was able to explain that kind of in general terms.
Yeah, I think that was good. And I did have Aether on about a month ago, and they gave kind of a similar overview. And this was like a good review for me. I think that they were choosing even less validators than that, which is cool, because like you said, the chain can select whatever that optimal number might be, at least at the launch, right? Can't that number change as we progress over time?
So it can, and there's we're actually talking to Informal about that right now. So, you know, the number I threw out is obviously just a notional number. We don't exactly know how many we want to go with for launch. But what it would require right now, based on the way they designed it, is governance. So you'd have to actually put governance up on the Cosmos Hub to raise the active, to increase the active set.
Okay, very cool. Very cool. And that's in stark contrast to Archway's route or any other sovereign chain, right, Max?
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I guess it's one of the trade-offs, right? Like you can inherit security from a chain, especially something like the Hub that has a large set of security. But I really do like the idea of partial set much better than kind of the initial ICS vision with just having all the validators included, because I think you're putting a lot of validators in a tough position where they're not having really the option to elect into it. And therefore they might be having to run additional resources and expend a lot of extra resources as well on chains they may not see the value in. So I think partial set's definitely a step in the right direction. And applications like Ellis actually make a lot of sense, I think, for something like that, especially initially until they grow enough to really demand the block space that they need to spin off and become Alar one themselves.
Okay. Robo, are you a validator also? Damn, I think I lost audio. Is he talking or no?
Yeah, we can hear him.
Okay, I can't hear him.
I cannot hear him either.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Robo, can you leave and come back and I'll try to get you up on stage, because I still can't see you up here, which is really odd if you have a mic and you're not up here. So maybe if you leave and come back, we'll wait for you.
Yeah, he said he's jumping off. So I guess while he's saying that, I can speak to, actually, since he brought up governors, that's actually another great piece of this is, as you know, Stride and Neutron, as ICS chains, they use governors for the governance. So the governors actually exist on those specific chains and not on Cosmos Hub. So the governance is still handled on those chains. And that's exactly the same way with partial set security. So if we go to a 40 validator set with Cosmos Hub with partial set security, we could still run 80 or 100 governors on our own chain, right? So we're not limited by the number of their validators. We can have more governors. So it's actually kind of a nice deal for us. We can decentralize governance a little more. So we really like that feature. We kind of already have, like, because a lot of the validators that have been with us in the testnet are sad to see their positions go, right? So, but they're likely to be governors for us instead. So I think it's a little bit of a difficult transition for them, because most of them tend to lean towards the technical side and not the governance side. And now we're asking them to be just purely governance and some technical, like when it comes to things like IBC relayers and other infrastructure that we might be looking for. So yeah, it's a really great feature that we can split off the network security from the governance.
Wait, so you're saying there's going to be basically two different types of props. One type of prop goes to the validator set of the hub, another type of prop is handled kind of in-house by those governors. Is that right?
Yes. So anything that's Cosmos Hub related still has to be Cosmos Hub governance. So, like, for example, for us to be accepted into the Atom Economic Zone, still has to be a Cosmos Hub proposal. And then if we want to increase the validator set on partial set security, that has to be a Cosmos Hub proposal for now. So anything that's just directly something that affects only our chain, so it doesn't affect Cosmos Hub, then we can use our governor set to do those proposals. So, for example, if we want to change the bonding period from 14 days, which is what we're at in testnet, let's say we want to reduce it to 10 days, that would be done on our set via our governors.
Okay, makes sense. All right, so you set Atom Economic Zone. I think I know what it is, but I've seen a lot of people with different definitions, and I want to get Robo involved here. So, Robo, what do you consider to be the Atom Economic Zone, if you had to define it?
Can everyone hear me okay? Better now?
I've got you now, and I could see you as a co-host, so I think there was just like a little glitch in the beginning, but I think you're good.
Sweet. So I think it's a really interesting definition. I think probably most people would agree that it does encompass, Cosmos Hub consumer chains. And I think that's probably a pretty uncontroversial take. And then there's also the other, I guess, maybe a little bit more controversial take that this may also encompass chains that, receive and give value to the Cosmos Hub in some other way. Right. And I think that we're trending in a direction that kind of looks a little bit more closely to the second version of that. I would say, at Sunny, for example, from Osmosis very much wants to bucket Osmosis as part of being part of the Atom Economic Zone as well. Just because there's already such a strong economic relationship between the two chains, right? It's where most of the Cosmos tokens are traded, at least currently, and there are various POL agreements and things like this. So I can't say that there's definitely one definitive concrete answer, but to me, that's the part that's so exciting about it, right? Because coming down the line, we're going to see things like restaking, Atom restaking, or LST Atom restaking is going to be something that probably gains a bit of traction coming up in this upcoming cycle. So if you have a chain that's receiving a bunch of security from, let's say ST Atom, for example, is that chain part of the Atom Economic Zone? There's, I would say quite a bit of logic behind that argument, right? Because it's relying on Atom and the Cosmos Hub for quite a bit of security, despite not being a consumer chain. And there's obviously a lot of value flow going back and forth between the two as well.
Okay, that's interesting. So you're saying in the not too distant future, people will be able to stake liquid staking derivatives on chains that are not the native tokens chain?
Yeah, actually, there are a couple chains that offer this already. One of them being the Migaloo chain. This is effectively like through the Alliance module. I know Persistence is also working on this. So I wouldn't be surprised to see these kinds of use cases expanding quite a bit.
Got it. Okay. All right. I have a hard time envisioning what that's going to be like, you know, from the user perspective, but maybe I am a Migaloo, a whale holder, I stake and all that, but I definitely don't stake the liquid staking derivatives. I'm sure that'll be like the most controversial thing in 2024 anyway, liquid staking derivatives. So, and the way they are used to kind of get around some of the limitations of tokens and blockchains. But I think you laid out kind of like two interpretations of Atom Economic Zone. And the reason why I asked it, because I remember seeing one of Sunny's tweets saying Osmosis is part of the Atom Economic Zone. And I'm like, well, they're probably the two chains that are the most tied together historically. So he's not wrong. But I like a kind of nice, neat definition for my own mind to get around it. I'm like, well, how about we just call the consumer chains the Atom Economic Zone? That way the consumer chains get kind of like a special status in the ecosystem, so they're more incentivized to stay. I don't know. That's just the way that my mind thinks. Max, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I guess I was just going to say, like, with the Atom Economic Zone piece, I think it can really kind of include anyone who's working with Atom. Like, for example, if you are able to cut a deal with the Hub or the AEZ or the Atom Accelerator, any of those, and you get like liquidity provided to, let's say, Archway, or incentives provided to certain pools on different chains to attract, you know, more users to participate or hold Atom, I think that makes sense. Like, you want distribution, and we're seeing that, you know, blockchains becoming more and more interoperable. It's like, you want to have your liquidity across multiple chains, in my opinion. And so therefore you can work with multiple teams across all these different networks and provide liquidity and incentives when you're someone like the Hub who realizes that, you know, they need to find more ways to accrue value to the token. I think you can do this through distribution and finding more ways to generate revenue through things like consumer chains and other ways of generating, I guess, through like building treasury with deals with Stride and other chains like that. So I think there's ways for Atom to participate across the entire IBC ecosystem and even beyond, and make the Atom Economic Zone, you know, much larger than just three or four chains.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I'm sure there are people who envision like a world where every single chain that's IBC connected is providing some value back to the Hub. It doesn't necessarily have to be monetary value. It could be whatever. Could be code, could be deployments of apps on various chains, right? So yeah, I definitely don't disagree with any of the definitions. In the beginning, I kind of like the simplistic, okay, it's consumer chains, that's the AEZ, and then there's the rest of the IBC. But lately we've seen the Hub provide some liquidity to Osmosis for Stride LPs, and also for Persistence, which is, you know, one of the first IBC chains, you know, for the ecosystem in the first place.
I guess you could look at it as like that economic zone is a greater kind of organization, and consumer chains are just one kind of department or one section of it. And it's one way that the Hub can generate value in return for the actual holders. But then I think there's, like I mentioned before, a lot of other ways to do that too. So I really liked what Persistence, I think it was, in Stride, are discussing and putting up a proposal on the Hub to do some sort of shared liquidity across different chains and different DEXs with their liquid stake tokens. I think that's an awesome way to include more and more teams and chains into the kind of Atom Economic Zone, and really just kind of help the entire ecosystem flourish. Because in my opinion, we're really fighting over a lot of crumbs when it comes to the Cosmos in general. and we should be really trying to boost each other up so we can even make an attempt to compete with these larger chains like Solana and, you know, Ethereum. And then we still have the L2s like Optimism, Arbitrum, and now Starknet, and a lot of these others that have launched recently. So there's like a lot of work to be done. And that's why I think it is important that we keep doing things like these shared spaces and discussing the pros and cons of each person's product, because there are differences. And then we can kind of build that together, and hopefully that'll draw enough attention to the Cosmos to kind of lift us all into that top 100, top 50 list.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think in the last bull market, I think the ecosystem as a whole, and this is just looking back, this is like, you know, in hindsight, the ecosystem as a whole, a lot of the chains were relatively new. They were trying to carve out their own niche and build up their own chains. A lot of opportunities were lost to celebrate and just boost the word on just how great IBC was each and every time a bridge in another ecosystem got hacked, for example, right? So if you had like a big Ethereum bridge hack or something like that, the entire ecosystem should almost like on a dime pivot, you know, put down whatever the immediate concerns are, and everybody should be putting out nonstop communication about IBC and just how secure it is, how useful it is, how fast it is, how reliable it is. And then there'll be people that maybe this kind of breaks through that bull market noise onto a lot of people's feeds, into a lot of people's discussions on Reddit or Telegram or whatever. So I definitely agree there. I definitely agree. But we do have some chains that are a little more closely connected, almost using the consumer chain, I would say, feature to get off the ground in the first place. It seems safer to me to start off as a consumer chain. So maybe Ellis Network, could you maybe give us one or two advantages to being a consumer chain that are maybe not that obvious to the end user?
Yeah, I think it's actually, I don't know that you can kind of break them down in like an advantage to the end user, because what the end user sees on their end, I'm not sure that they're going to notice if they're interacting, for example, if they're interacting with Stride or Neutron, they're not going to probably notice a difference if they were not interchain security, right? That really comes down to actually how well the performance of the validator set itself, you know, is going. So uptimes, upgrades going smoothly, et cetera. So that's kind of inherent to whether you're using partial set security or not. The validators still have to perform at a high level and make sure the infrastructure is working for you. So that's kind of a difficult one. But I will say, like, some of the advantages maybe is that you do getting separating out that network security from your governance. Maybe you do as a community get to spend a little more time really being thoughtful and methodical with your governance, right? Because now your governance is really, your governors really only focus on governance. Whereas with a, you know, as independent blockchain, your validators are voting, and your validators are dedicating so much of their time to that infrastructure. So it's actually one of the things I really love, because I'm part of the OtterSync validator team, and it's really, really hard for us to get our votes in and make sure we're doing our uptime and make sure we're hitting our upgrades and dealing with emergency, outages and things like that. So I think it's a huge advantage to separate out the validating from the governance, in my personal opinion. I think there's probably other people who would take maybe the opposite side of that, but I think it's actually better. And I kind of maybe make the analogy to a standard economy, right? If you're like building out a city or a state, you know, you're not going to have your electricians also, you know, running the government, right? You're not going to have your plumbers also flying the airplanes, right? So I think it just allows us to really specialize in our duties within this ecosystem. And I think that's really part of the maturity and how we're getting to the next stage in, you know, building out the next phase of Web3 and then getting to that revenue generation, which is the holy grail of what we're all trying to do here.
Okay, makes sense. Max, what do you think is something that might be a drawback of being an ICS chain, at least at in the beginning?
I mean, I guess I wouldn't say it's a drawback as much as there's just trade-offs. And I think that's kind of what that they're getting at as well with Alice Network, is like, you just need to look at what you value most. And I think what Alice is doing is really cool with the splitting the governance. I think that's an issue that needed to be addressed a while ago, just because, to his point, the technical side of validating should not really be crossed with the governance of a chain. They're not fully aligned. I mean, sometimes there are technical things that need to be discussed, but anyway, I digress. I would say the trade-offs are really just like, when you use a consumer chain, it's you're basically paying for security in some sense. So what you're doing is like you're valuing the security of the hub and really the hub's backing and the brand and the treasury, I guess, and community pool of the hub to help you reach, you know, that kind of terminal velocity, let's say, as an application or a chain. Whereas I think with like Archway, you're relying on a team that, you know, for example, like myself, I think we have a very proficient, really talented team that can really build good infrastructure. And there's a lot of contributors helping us do that. But then we also need application developers. So I think the benefits of building on something like Archway is like you get someone else who's going to maintain the core infrastructure and deal with all the upgrades and things like that in the validator set coordination. Well, you can focus on your app and the applications. And you'll be subsidized by the chain. So I think that's the big difference is instead of like renting security, you're actually going to be subsidized by Archway. And that's because of how our inflation model works, where you know each block, a portion of inflation gets distributed to the application layer based on how much gas was consumed by each application in that block. So you know we understand like security is super important, and I think everyone here agrees with that. But the value is actually created at the application layer. So we think it's important to also subsidize the application layer with inflation, since we see inflation as really a way to decentralize the cost of overhead of running a chain. And security is one piece of it, but to create value for the chain, you need applications. And so therefore, Archway subsidizing, and I think that's a major benefit.
All right, fair enough. I think we could talk about apps, right? I think that's a good way to go from here. So Ellis Network, I don't know that much about what the plans are for the chain. Are you guys going to be an app chain? Are you going to be an all-purpose smart contract platform, permissionless? What kinds of things are we going to see on the chain in the early, at least in the early days?
All of the above. Can I say that? No. We're an app chain. So while we do run our own web app and our chain is kind of focused to our suite of all-in-one DeFi apps, we're also going to be inviting other teams and projects to be building their dApps on our chain. So it's actually one of the really great things kind of when we talk about this Atom Economic Zone and the construct now that we have, you know, independent layer ones, we have interchain security chains, we have partial set security, and then maybe soon, coming soon, right, a version two of you might have a grid model of where you could have a partial validators from Cosmos and partial validators from that chain. That remains to be seen if that comes, right? But this optionality that you have now allows different teams who want to launch various projects, whether they be chains or apps, it gives them a place to kind of a chance to kind of figure out where their place is going to be in this entire ecosystem, which I really love. Like having that customization to be able to figure out where you're going to fit in there. Just is going to bring in so much more development. So for us, we do want to offer that customization. We will be inviting, once we get to the point where we're generating significant revenue and we have some coming back to our own protocol, we'll be doing grants. We'll be encouraging a lot of development. Just recently at ETH Denver, I spoke with a couple of academic institutions, one of them being IC3, which I believe is Cornell. I got to look that up, but they were very, very interested in taking a look at our chain and maybe helping us out. We could sponsor, for example, academic programs to build on our chain. So we're not necessarily just focused on our own web app. We're focused on actually finding ways for our chain to generate additional revenue for the AEZ.
Cool. And then, yeah, that organization you named IC3, it is a Cornell organization. Interesting.
We have a couple as well. There's also University of Oregon has reached out to us and we've been talking to them, and it's actually for us, we think it's really cool because a lot of us, you know, we owe our roots to, you know, our academic backgrounds, and we want to also get the ball rolling from the college level, if not earlier, for developers, right? I think at the college level, probably people are leaning towards going EVM and Ethereum. But what if we could get the Cosmos name and the Cosmos ecosystem, Cosmos SDK, kind of ingrained at that level, right? Then we start seeing the development come in. And I think, you know, because we're severely lacking on devs in the Cosmos space. And I can tell you, because we're trying to hire some, right? So, you know, that's really important for us. And I think that's really should be part of every chain's, you know, ethos, is to really think about how they can partner up and maybe, you know, talk, you know, either offer grant programs or discuss with like academic institutions on how they can kind of expand the footprint there.
Yeah, and not even just to bring people in Cosmos, but to bring people into the space in general, right? Because when you compare it to, you know, the size of Web2, for example, you know, we're teeny tiny, right? So this is really like a grassroots way to kind of start from the bottom up and grow adoption for the whole space, which I love to see.
Yeah, I think that like there's not many starting points still to become a developer that's going to go directly into Web3, you know, app building. And I'm a teacher and I do teach some tech classes. I am not a programmer, but I teach like some very low level coding classes. And like, we just bought a whole bunch of other courses that we're going to use. And there's nothing that even touches on like, you know, Web3, other than in the finance courses, there's a Bitcoin course, but it's focused only on Bitcoin as like a financial instrument, I guess you could say, nothing from the developer point of view. So I think that's going to have to change. And maybe organizations like what we're mentioning, you know, for in the college level, maybe in a couple of years, we're talking about high school level or even younger to get the ball rolling there, to kind of have a pipeline.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of challenges there, to be honest. Like, it's not only that there's not a lot of developers, but like you said, there's not a lot of resources. So not only do you have to find Rust developers, but then you have to figure out if they can, you know, learn Cosmosm, which is getting better with documentation, I would say, across, you know, all these different chains. But it's not easy. And I think so actually, Archway built something out called Area 52. And it's actually a really cool way to onboard developers from Rust into building smart contracts in Cosmosm. And it makes it a lot easier to like onboard like a newer user. So when you're working with these colleges and maybe they do have some Rust experience, you can tie that directly into how you would launch an NFT collection or build an application on an app chain or on a layer one like Archway. So I think we need more collaboration around things like that, like those educational tools that help to onboard users, kind of like Crypto Zombies used to be. I think it's a very similar concept. And I think that's a good way to get people engaged. And then also, like they're talking about, going to campuses, getting the younger generation involved and learning about what you can do with the Cosmos stack, and kind of get them away from thinking Solidity is the only way. And there is a little bit of a learning curve, I guess, that makes Solidity a little more attractive too. But ultimately, I think you can convince people that it's worth the time to learn something like Rust when you can build out really robust applications on the Cosmos stack.
How much background knowledge do you need to start Area 52?
I would say you have to have at least a general understanding of like Rust or like basic programming syntax.
Got it. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So this is really encouraging to hear that you guys are doing that at Archway, because, you know, we're obviously always very excited when we have somebody like Adam Accelerator DAO, right, that's out there, you know, trying to promote growth and development in the ecosystem. And we're so early innings, right? So once all these chains, let's say, whether it be in the Adam economic zone or not, or, you know, depending on how you define it, once these chains actually have enough revenue that they can now really go heavy on this budget to get these developers over. Because, you know, what if they are Solidity engineers that want to come over and learn, but they can't take 2 months off work or 3 months off work, so we have to pay for that while they learn the code, right? So those are the things that I see coming over the next few years, which makes me so bullish on the Cosmos ecosystem, right? There's going to be the time where we're actually able to essentially fund the actual education programs for these developers to come over, and then they'll be able to build. So it's a very, very slow process. But I love also, not to digress, what's happening in parallel is also we're finding the avenues for liquidity coming into the Cosmos ecosystem are also being built to unbelievable scale, right? And of course, the most obvious Example of that being Circle CCTP, you know, thanks to Noble Chain and the great team that's, you know, that's been working hard over there. So really, really great things all being built out with specificity. And I'm really, really encouraged by that.
One thing that I see, and I see Swiss down there in the audience, when I do my live stream, Swiss comes in with a quick overview of, you know, VC activity in Web3. And we see, you know, obviously we're not looking at every single deal that goes down, but it just seems very skewed towards infrastructure versus apps. Is there a way to change that? Is it going to have to be just like, a lot of this infrastructure is going to have to fail in the next 2 to 3 years for people to realize, maybe we should build apps because that's what people actually use and we can get more people to use the chains that way. I'll let all three of you guys answer what needs to change there. Because I just see like, you know, millions of dollars getting poured into what might be very redundant infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just really quickly say that I think it's a bit of chicken and the egg, right? You got to build the networks for the apps to show up, and you have to have the apps for the users to provide the, you know, the attraction and excitement for people to build networks. So it is a bit of a conundrum, right? And I think really why we shouldn't necessarily worry too much about that right now is we do have a lot of attention in the VC space. There is a lot of money being invested in the Cosmos ecosystem behind the scenes. And just seeing that even Circle, you know, gave that nod of approval and basically says, yes, we want to have native USDC. And at the same time, Tether, you know, said, yes, we want native USDT, right? Those were kind of like the green lights that basically say the development's coming one way or another. And failure is not a sign, you know, failure of these blockchains is not a sign of, you know, the poor health of the ecosystem. In fact, it's actually a necessary component of what we have to go through as we mature into the next phase of Web3. So yes, we're going to see several chains fail, and that's perfectly healthy. It's just like, you know, what we deal with in, you know, in the equity markets, right? Like if a startup company simply just doesn't make it, it doesn't mean that the rest of the economy is failing, right? So I actually, I'm super, super encouraged by this. And I think, I don't know what you guys think, Robo or Max.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things here with apps versus infra is building apps is just hard, right? It's really, really hard because you have to not only, right, like build the thing, but you have to stand out. You've got to do something different a lot of times, because that's what your users are looking for. Was, you know, one of the reasons I was so excited when I demoed Ellis's product, right? There's definitely like some distinction there in the way that the like user flow works. You have to have something to stand out. You can't just be like another Uniswap fork, or else you're competing with, you know, 300 other Uniswap forks for users and adoption. In a sense, it's a little bit, I don't want to say easier because I don't think that's the right word, but when you have 300 Uniswap forks, right, they need somewhere to go, right? So in that sense, if you build infrastructure, you know that you're going to get developers, you're going to get people that come in. And you know, maybe Swiss can speak to this, but I think when you have like a really, really strong application that stands out and does something different, that's the kind of product that I would imagine VCs are probably tripping over themselves to fund.
I mean, to give you my take, I think it's really just comes down to it's easy to make money as a VC off of a layer one, and they've seen it done, so they know how it works. So to me, that's really what it comes down to, because a lot of chains don't have any real way to return value to the token holders in any meaningful way, or really any plan to. But that's okay, because most of these investors like VCs only have, you know, a couple of year vests. So they're not really too concerned about the 5 to 10 year, you know, trajectory of the chain. They're really concerned about the short term. So I think that's a big part of it, is that a lot of the really talented engineers build the infrastructure because they can get funded, and therefore they can build out what they want. So they might want to build an app, but they can only get funded as an app chain because it's a layer one. And so now they're in a situation where, you know, the trade-off is they have to go get a validator set, and now they have to be in charge of coordinating, really bootstrapping this chain. But in return, you get $5-10 million of funding from VC. So I think that's a big piece of it, is that you're really deterring people from building apps, because like like Robo mentioned, it's actually not easy to get funded as an app. Most go through the grant programs, which are basically subsidized by chains. So again, it's basically like you're passing investor money on through grants, because that's what's building up most of that treasury that you're dishing out via either tokens or stables. So I think that's a big thing, is like we just need to encourage application building more. And I think that's really a big piece of what Archway is trying to do with our incentive mechanisms by splitting the gas fees with smart contracts, by allowing them to set premiums on the gas so they can set the minimum they are willing to accept, and by pointing a portion of inflation at the application layer to subsidize it so that they can earn meaningful amounts from the value they're actually bringing to the chain. Because ultimately, you're going to a chain to use an app, right? Like you're going there to do something on chain, which requires a user interface and typically an application like a DEX or a money market or a NFT market, what have you. So they should share in the value because they're driving really the gas being consumed, which is ultimately what you're doing as a blockchain, which is selling block space. So I think we do need to think about that more and how we incentivize applications and developers so they build the app layer out, because that's what people want to use. And that's why people love Terra, because they had a great product with Anchor. Whether the economics made sense, we saw the result of that, but they had a lot of good applications and a lot of things people wanted to use. Therefore, they were willing to go there and spend their money and invest. And I think that's what we need to keep doing, is keep funding projects and allowing the apps to build and not continuing just to do more layer ones.
Yeah. How about that Terra community? The Anchor protocol was so good. People are still buying the LUNK tokens. It's amazing.
Yeah. And I actually think like they did a big like service to the Cosmos just within like their, how they did UI and their UX of Terra. They really showed Cosmos how to build out an ecosystem of apps. I think before that, you really just had like Osmosis and a few other applications. So there wasn't a lot going on up until they kind of built Terra out. So I always respect what they did in that sense for the Cosmos.
Yeah, and you do see that with some of the teams that have, you know, spun off and either built apps or even built their own chains around Cosmos. So there's that as well. So yeah, no, I agree. I wasn't a big Terra user, but I always knew of it, and now like one of the ecosystems I use the most is Kajira, right? They're from Terra.
Yeah. So I'll add to that, you know, this is really, again, it's part of the process, right? That we are going to experience failures along the way, whether they may be kind of force majeure or some sort of really like black swan type of event, right? But also along the same lines, like you guys mentioned earlier, cooperation is so key to building forward. So that's the one thing I've noticed through the bear market, is where you went from kind of being like a siloed competitive space where chains were kind of trying to compete for users from each other into a more collaborative mindset of, wait, what's the point of us taking your users? And then 6 months later, you take our users. There's no inflow of capital into the ecosystem and there's no development and there's nothing happening, right? So I think the mindset has definitely shifted to say, let's not compete with each other. Let's cooperate and let's go get the user who's never used crypto before, or the centralized exchange user, or the, you know, the Apple app store user. Let's get those people, let's bring them in, right? And I think that's really refreshing, you know, to see.
I think the number one opportunity is to focus on that centralized exchange crypto person who doesn't even know that they can take their tokens off the exchange. But I think you need an app that's intuitive to motivate them to do that. It probably could be done with like a good staking UI, like a very clean, like, hey, take your tokens off the exchange. Coinbase is only giving you 6%, but you're supposed to be getting 11%. If you do this now, you learn about wallets and you learn about staking. That's like kind of like 101 for proof of stake, I feel like. And that's a good opportunity. Of course, the ideal thing would be get these people to use cool apps that also deliver value back to the chain that they're on, because that's kind of how the networks will become, I guess, exponentially more appealing and sustainable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. And when you think about it, we have less than 7 million DeFi users, but we have over 200 million centralized exchange users. You can see how off balance that is. So the opportunity is definitely there. It's obviously we're building the roads right now to get, you know, for that infrastructure. So right now, CCTP, getting native USDC. Now, for example, if you have Coinbase, you can now get USDC directly into the ecosystem for the first time ever, right? Once they went live, that was a really, really big deal because now the user can start sending their assets into the Cosmos ecosystem. But the other big thing that's lacking for us entirely, you know, in the entire Web3 space is our on-ramps are way too expensive and are way too hard to use. So this is one of the problems that we're actually tackling at LS Network, because from the UI UX perspective, we are really, really focused there. We have a lot of control over that, but we don't have control over the on-ramps yet. So when you talk to like a MoonPay or a Kado or OnRamp or uTorg, the big blocker we ask our users all the time, why aren't you using them? They're like, well, if I send $100, I only get 93, you know, or 92 actually onto the DEX because they're taking a huge cut. You know, I'd rather just go do it through a centralized exchange and I'll just stay there. So that's a big deal, right? I mean, when people are frugal and people don't like to spend money on fees. And so I think that's going to be a focus area going forward, is how do we bring those fees down? How do we work with our partners at these on-ramps? And I'm really excited because they're working very, very hard using the CCTP. It's going to bring their cost down, which they'll be able to pass on to the end user. And that is another great thing to look forward to.
All right. If anyone's in the audience, you want to request a mic, feel free. We can definitely pivot. But I have one more area that I want to get into that where all three of you can kind of weigh in. As far as LS Network, will you have your own token? Do you have to have your own token? I know with Archway, you need a layer one token to kind of make the network go. And then from Robo's perspective, let's take the position of like the user. Consumer chains, yay or nay, in starting off with their own tokens. So I'll let LS Network attack that one first.
Yes, so we do have our own token. It will be the LS token. That'll be a governance and staking token as well as a gas fee option. With obviously the recent versions of Cosmos SDK, you can pay your gas fees and other tokens if your chain enables it. So at launch, we already have in our testnet Atom and USDC as gas fee options, and we can add additional gas fee options as well. But we'll probably launch with those three at a minimum. So for LS owners, they can stake their LS through a traditional staking method, although we customize that module and you receive Eden, which is our vesting token, as your staking reward. That's a 90-day vesting token. And then after that, you can redeem it for LS. Once you redeem it for LS, you can actually decide to take your Eden and recommit it back into the system, and you can earn additional, you can stake that, vest it, or recommit it and earn an additional bonus incentive, which we call Eden Boost. So it's a way to encourage long-term holding of the LS token. But one thing that we do as a next-gen DEX is we have not paired any of our pools with LS. So we use USDC for our pools. And that's one of the advantages I think that we have, you know, being going launching when we are, is that we have that option, right? First generation DEXs unfortunately did not have an option to pair with USDC or USDT. So they had to come up with a different design and they used their own token for that. Now you're starting to see them migrate to the USDC, USDT model, because that's what has been so successful with centralized exchanges, essentially to be paired with some sort of dollar, you know, some sort of stable equivalent. So really the user can come onto the LS DEX onto the web app and never interact with LS token if they don't want to. They can do all their business, their swapping, their perp trading, their USDC staking, and they could just pay their gas fees in another token. So they don't have to own the LS token. And that was really important to us because we wanted to separate out the product, the actual UX, from the ownership of the token. It's the same reason, like, if I'm a Wells Fargo customer, if I'm a Bank of America customer, or if I buy Nikes, whatever, I don't have to buy the stock to do those things, right? I don't have to buy Nike stock to wear Nike shoes. I like Nike shoes, right? So that's our business model, is we want you to come use our product because you like the product. We're not gonna make you buy the token. The people who like the product will eventually buy the token. That's what ends up happening. And so that's how we want to prove our value in the space. And we think that they'll stay because the rewards are going to be very, very generous if we achieve our revenue targets.
Yeah. And as far as, whether from the user perspective, you would want to have a token or not for an ICS chain to launch, I think maybe it's it really just depends on what you're going to do with it, right? Kind of going back to Hesham's example here of earlier DEXs like Osmosis, for example, you know, didn't have access to ICS, subsidized its own validator set. So initially, and I know, Joe, you're the last person I have to tell this to, but, you know, you have a bunch of tokens that are flowing to liquidity incentives, but you also have tokens that are flowing to the validator set, right? ICS gives you a little more optionality where you can choose maybe, you know, you can subsidize liquidity slightly, but you don't also have to funnel a bunch of money to validators. You know, you can slash emissions significantly, like Stride has, for example. Stride is down, I believe, now to like 2%, 3%, maybe 2-3% inflation, and real revenue for Stride is something closer to like 5 or 6%. You know, and really that's an option primarily because of ICS. You don't have to worry as much about subsidizing your security. Cosmos Hub kind of takes care of that for you, and that gets even more efficient with something like partial set security. So really it's not our tokens, you know, bad. It's more just, are you being smart about how you're deploying your token if you do choose to launch one?
Yeah, I just want to quick respond to that as far as the tokens. I think that what we're seeing now with like the Solana meme craze is that there's a ton of focus on tokens. And I think it's a good thing and a bad thing. I think for new people, seeing all these different tokens is going to be a shock, especially for, let's say, if you're American or Canadian, you're not used to dealing in different currencies for the most part. But the fact that there are so many tokens, it's going to force the issuers to make their tokens desirable and not just simply launch farming tokens, which is, I think, was the case like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, where like the tokens got farmed and then the charts end up speaking for themselves. I don't have a problem per se, like directing value to validators, but I think that can't be the only purpose of the token, because then it just never recovers, especially if there's any kind of inflation schedule. Like you could have 1% inflation and the token could still go down in a bull market if nobody's buying it, right? So yeah, I think we're going to enter a time where the tokenomics are very carefully thought out. And I think like maybe this Solana meme thing where everyone's looking at these tokens like, well, how do I get my token attention on my token if all these crappy tokens are out there? Well, I got to make my token good. And I think that's going to be a net positive.
That's a really great point. When you talk about, you know, how thoughtful the tokenomics should be, right? So, you know, a lot of chains kind of learn this the hard way, going from a bull market to a bear market, because in a bear market, it's a function of demand. So if you have high inflation, but the demand is there, it's getting bought up. But as soon as you're in that bear market where the demand completely is destroyed, right, there's nobody there to absorb that inflation. And we've seen this not just in cryptocurrency, we've seen it in actual currency. And so I think it's a lesson learned. It's an opportunity for a lot of like chains, whether they be startups or existing chains, to really, really be thoughtful, not just about their tokenomics, but about their governance, that everything that they vote on and everything that they decide to do with their token has an implication. And there needs to be very, very, you know, comprehensive discussions and debates on whether this is good for their particular project. We went through a lot of debate at LS Network on when we decided to max our supply out at 200 million tokens, because that's considered to be very, very low, you know, by industry standards. And the reason we did that is because we wanted to be thoughtful to the people who are essentially going to be loyal to LS Network from the very beginning, who are going to come in and participate in whether it be staking or liquidity pools or any of the other functions that we have on our platform, that they were going to actually be rewarded in revenue share and not the inflation of our token. Like, yes, we'll use inflation of our token for initial bootstrapping and maybe some partnerships, et cetera, and our airdrop, of course, which we announced, you know, earlier. Those are, of course, things that you can use as tools, but they shouldn't be the business, right? The business shouldn't be the inflation of your token, the dishing out of your token. Your business should be your product or your service that you offer. And that's why I really like talking to Stride and Archway, because they don't talk too much about their token, right? They talk about their business. And I love that, right? I think that's, we've really turned a corner in terms of how we actually, you know, are taking control of the narrative on where crypto is going, that we're, especially within the Cosmos ecosystem, really, really focused on quality products and services that users will want to actually partake in.
Yeah, I agree. And we've seen that change happen pretty quick, which is a good thing, just in time for the new market cycle, I think. Max, any thoughts on a way to have a consumer chain without a token, how that might look, how it might work as good or better than immediately launching a token? Or do you think that the layer one should just launch a token and make it make sense from a governance perspective, at least?
I mean, I think in any situation, kind of back to what I was already kind of said, is that it really depends on what the application is and if there's a need. Like, in my opinion, for example, the hub could just build a DEX directly on the hub, or even have a DEX, like, let's say Duality, that is an ICS chain that's kind of owned by the hub itself and operates without paying any sort of rent. It just accumulates fees in Atom or whatever token. And in fact, what they could do is collect fees from all the tokens that are traded, and inherently they'll build a treasury of fees in the tokens that are most used. And therefore you're kind of building up a treasury of what I would say are more solid assets over time. Or you can really use governance to transition these into more solid assets, like whether it be stables or buy back Atom, or to turn it into what have you. But I think it really makes a lot of sense for most chains, most consumer chains, to not have a token. But where I think it gets tricky is that then there's really no way for them to monetize it as a builder. Unless they do some sort of equity, which would require some sort of buyout, which doesn't make sense in a decentralized chain, or take a salary from the hub, or basically a payout. And I think that's a big problem, is that we haven't really established processes and procedures to make that a reasonable thing. So therefore, we just rely on basically a token to be your equity that you can distribute. And if people believe in your project, they'll hold it. And you can operate basically off of that, either inflation or what you sell. So there's probably other options I'm kind of leaving out, so feel free to jump in, anyone. But I do think not having a token is totally feasible for most, unless you need it for governance or something of that nature.
Got it. All right. I got PSX up here finally. Sorry that you got kicked off when I rugged really quick, but feel free to chime in. Anybody else that wants to grab the mic, just request. We'll be happy to address questions.
No worries, Joe. Good to hear from you. And thanks for bringing me up. I had a question for Robo. You emphasized, and you have to forgive me, I'm a pleb. I'm not as smart as most people think I am, really. So I'm going to probably ask some really dumb questions, so bear with me. You emphasized ICS, and it's an acronym that I'm not familiar with. I would believe this is the first time I'm hearing it, but I kind of dabbled around a little bit on the internet just to see what it was, just for the sake of educating myself. But it looks like I came across a Medium article, IBC versus ICS. I'm trying to understand the two and why you emphasized on ICS. And then the second question, this can go to anybody, is after looking through the website briefly, I'm not sure if you guys even mentioned it earlier, because I did come pretty late, I guess. When do you guys plan to launch, if I heard correctly?
Yeah, so I can go ahead and tackle that first one. Can't speak for the article that you read, but ICS is just short for Interchain Security. So this is the Cosmos Hub's shared security model, where basically you have consumer chains like Stride or Ellis that will be effectively being secured by either all or some of the Cosmos Hub's validators. And in that process, they get access to all or some of the Cosmos Hub's economic security, which is, you know, something like $3 billion worth of staked Atom. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it does. That, which actually, I think you just unloaded a lot more questions on me that I have. So I'm sorry. I get curious that, because throughout Cosmos, throughout other blockchains in and outside of this ecosystem, everybody's kind of doing their own security. Do you think that this would help standardize the security process and procedures?
Within the Cosmos ecosystem, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's a great first step. I think right now, ICS is going through some scalability issues, which mm-hmm. I'm, you know, very excited about the potential for partial set security to help solve. So I definitely think it's a good first step. As Max has said, I don't believe that it's the right path for everyone. Some chains will want to continue to be their own independent app chain and provide their own security, for various reasons. But I definitely think there's a strong future here where there are several chains all secured by the Cosmos Hub.
Okay, cool. And then the question that I had after that was like, when are you guys planning to launch? And I did lie. I do have another question after that one. So.
Oh, no problem, man. No problem.
Yeah. For Ellis Network, we're going to launch once PSS is completed. So that testnet's going to be rolling out. We're going to make sure there's no issues with the operation of our web app and then the entire chain. And they're targeting sometime either at the end of this quarter or the beginning of next quarter.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay, cool. And then this one's going to be kind of loaded. So if I offend anybody, sorry, not sorry. But a natural observation I've had throughout Cosmos is that there seems to be kind of a knowledge gap between developers and governance or those who run validators. It seems that, you know, in something that was intended to provide some type of level of transparency, some type of control away from institutional government versus here on the blockchain, it seems like we're running into that same problem from the real world even into this digital space. Is there any kind of like, what's the process about becoming a validator with Elise? And again, it's just I guess my worry is that, you know, given the governance setup, it tends to naturally create this hyperbolic environment where sometimes if the community as a whole can't come to a consensus, it's just it starts to turn into a shit show. I would know.
Yeah, exactly, right? So yeah, it's messy, and we expect it to be messy because governance is not supposed to be easy, right? So for us, right, because we'll have a governor set, the initial governor set will be a Genesis governor set that we will essentially be setting up via our token delegations for those validators who participated with us during testnet or are providing some sort of, you know, additional contributions to Ellis Network. They will become the Genesis governors. Now, outside of that, after we launch, anybody can become a governor simply by purchasing enough Ellis to get into the active set. So this, just like the same way right now, if I wanted to become a Atom validator, I would just have to purchase about $1 million worth of Atom, and then, you know, easier said than done, right? And then get myself into the active validator set and then start voting. So it is a monetary, you know, unfortunately, that's the way proof of stake chains work, right? So it is a monetary kind of delineation on who gets into that active set once you're mainnet. So there's a lot of pros and cons as to why that is. I'm a big fan of proof of stake myself. The key is to be thoughtful in the design of how you distribute and decentralize that chain so that there isn't one person with too much voting power or a civil, right? So several people operating under the same kind of voting, I guess, entity, right? So the way we do it at Ellis Network is we max out everyone's voting delegations to 6.6%. So no governor will be allowed to receive additional delegations once they have 6.6% voting power. It's super important for us. We actually customize the Cosmos SDK code for that. If in a perfect world, I would actually make that a standard in Cosmos SDK. I would actually put in a max voting power directly into the Cosmos SDK. But hey, it's everybody's choice on what they want to do. So again, that's just personal opinion. So I don't mean to judge anybody else for having the reasons why they would do it any other way. But that's one of the ways we try to decentralize from our end.
No worries. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. And thank you, Joe.
Hey, no problem, man. No problem. Yeah, I think there has to be a way to kind of contain the top of the validator set in some way with voting power. And I've thought of like so many different ways, but then you basically have to get the validators to vote on it, right? So it's easier to do with a brand new chain starting up, I think. So I think you guys did it right. Max, get
just a quick question. Do you guys, for the governors, do you incentivize them to be governors, or I guess what is your guys' plan for aligning them so that they, you know, they do come out and vote and really do, you know, read through the governance proposals and get community feedback?
That's a great question. So their initial delegation that'll come from, you know, from Ellis Foundation will at least get them bootstrapped and then on the active set, and they'll earn staking commission. So anybody who's staking their Ellis with them, it's just like a validator set. Let's say they charge 5% or 6%. They will receive that commission off of staking the exact same way they would on a normal standalone chain. We are also setting a 5% minimum commission so that nobody tries to jump the list with a 0% commission, which was, you know, a difficult thing to do because we didn't want to like get in their way, you know.
And then I'm sorry, I'm just kind of curious. So when you delegate to like a governor, is that then staked to a specific validator that's tied to that governor, or is it then distributed kind of as needed to balance the set? And in that case, how do you really determine like an APR, I guess, because you're not really sure what the commission is for the user if they're going to a governor, I guess. Too complicated for now, but.
Yeah, and maybe Robo could talk about the Stride design because they use governors as well. So, you know, the validators are still validating and securing via Atom, right? So that's obviously entirely separate. The Ellis construct is the person who is staking their Ellis would still go and stake it, but what appears to them as a validator is actually a governor, right? So when they're actually staking their Ellis, they're actually staking it with somebody that from their end is like, okay, that looks like a governor to me based on what I'm used to seeing on other, you know, platforms, but it's, you know, or it looks like a validator, now it's a governor. So the governor still is taking the delegation from that user. And then it's the same formula that you would see, right? So it's the inflation formula times the, you know, with the bonded ratio divided by the amount of token staked, right? And then if you had a community tax, you'd also include that in there. So I'm sure you're familiar with that formula. And then we would also, on top of that, take all of our protocol system rewards and then divvy it up among liquidity providers, stakers. Some would come back to the protocol for grants and things and expenses. And then of course the percentage that we send over to the partial set security to the actual Cosmos hub. Once those funds that are sent to the Cosmos hub are actually sent to one location where the Cosmos Hub then distributes it to the Atom stakers on the partial set security chain.
Wow, that was incredibly well done. Thank you. Because that was kind of a loaded question, but I appreciate that. That was great context.
Yeah, no problem. We'll have a lot more, you know, because this is very, very complex. We'll have a lot more educational series on this, as well as discussion on the Cosmos Hub forums, because we have to go through the full governance process. And a lot of this actually has to get discussed with the validators, and the numbers have to still be set because we obviously have to be offering enough revenue to the Cosmos Hub for them to want to participate. So, you know, stay tuned for those.
This is the first I'm hearing about the governance system. But you're saying that, let's say I have Ellis tokens. When I go to stake my Ellis tokens, I'll see what looks like a validator set of 80 or however many validators you guys chose. Is that right?
Yes, they'll be governors. Yeah, you'll see. So you'll have a list of people to stake with, right? And they will be governors instead of validators.
And it won't be the same people that are the validators, or it could be.
It won't necessarily be the same validators on Cosmos Hub unless they happen to be our governors, which we, right now, I can't remember what the number is. Maybe it's about 10, eight to 10 of our validators right now at Ellis Network are actually Cosmos Hub validators, and they're super excited and they want to opt in. So I have a feeling we'll see them again, but yes, that would be the only scenario that you'd see a governor who's also a Cosmos Hub validator.
I mean, I don't think that you can do anything about the distribution of voting power for the hub active set other than with partial security, you can have a way to pick and choose throughout the validator set. Like maybe you pick the bottom 80 or the middle 80 or whatever the case might be. But for Ellis governance, and maybe I'm just not under, this is the first time I'm hearing about it. And what I was thinking was, you don't necessarily need a governor per validator, right?
Cool. Sorry, just trying to unmute that. No, that's correct. So like, for example, like in the example I gave earlier, like where you could have maybe 40 Cosmos Hub validators, you could have 100 governors, right? It's totally separate.
Right. But what I'm saying is what I don't know, and obviously I don't have all the info. This is what, like a reaction to hearing what you said. Let's say you have 80 validators. You could have 40 governors. And the voting power for the governors could go by the distribution of stake to the 80 validators. In other words, like let's say I'm a governor for the number one validator and the number 80 validator. And then another governor is number two and number 79. And then the third governor is 3 and 78. So they're getting the combined stake as voting weight from the top and the bottom of the active set, which would level things out quite nicely and would actually force them to lobby for the lower validators to get more stake to them if they're to increase their say in governance on Ellis, something like that. I would need to like write it down and map it out, but
yeah.
I know you guys have a system already, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, to be honest with you, the system is actually still being designed for PSS, but I just want to be clear that the validators don't participate in governance. And so it is completely, completely bifurcated. So the Cosmos Hub validators that are actually providing the network security for the chain are the ones that are actually running the binary file for LS network, right? So they're the ones that are actually running the blockchain itself. The governors themselves are taking care of the voting, and they are the ones being delegated the LS2. So that line doesn't really get crossed unless it just happens to so be that one of the validators is also a governor just by chance. Now, we don't get to actually pick the bottom of this. Like, we can't say, hey, we would like to have Smart Stake, and we'd like to have, you know, Stake Cito and, you know, whoever, right? We don't get to actually choose the Cosmos Hub governors that are going to be our network security. That's actually going to be based on which model we go with, because there's two different models, and it will essentially be decided for us.
Got it. I think my way would be something to explore if the consumer chain did not have a token but wanted to have governance. But also, I probably shouldn't blurt out on a recorded space with 10% of the information a half-baked idea to confuse everyone in the space. So I'll marinate on that one. But I'm always thinking of ways to even out the active set in a way that's organic without punishing anyone. So I guess that's going to be like a separate series of spaces to where we can all talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Look, we could talk about it, like, you know, DM me or like we'll start a group discussion or something. We can figure out some cool ideas to kind of take this to the next level.
Got it.
But yeah, I mean, as far as like, you know, dealing with like voting powers that are not very well distributed right now, that's a question that people have been trying to tackle for a few years now, right? And it's why I keep leaning on how important governance is, right? And how we've come a long way and how we've evolved and matured since the beginning, right? Because when we started the governance process, we didn't really know as a community, you know, how this would go. But we're learning, right? And we do keep evolving and getting better and finding out what the threats are. I don't think anybody foresaw that, people will just keep piling on to the number one and number two validators. Why would they do that? But in reality, that's what people were doing because they didn't know. And they thought, bigger was safer, right? And that's how we got into this mess, right? So
yeah,
it was competing opinions on why would anybody stake their tokens with the number one validator? Don't they realize that's centralized, you know? And most people didn't realize, from a UI or UX perspective, they're just going to hit the top one on the list, right? So, I completely get it. And I'm confident we're going to sort through those issues as a community, and various chains will probably come up with different ideas. You know, the minimum commission helped a lot. Capping the delegation, you know, the voting power, capping delegations is a huge help. There's probably going to be some others to maybe incentivize, you know, staking with a bottom validator as well, that people could, you know, come up with creative ideas to make that happen.
Got it. Well, no, I appreciate the insights here. And I'm really like so intrigued by this, like the AEZ in its most simple form, right? You have the hub and you've got a bunch of chains sharing the validator set. They should be incentivized to kind of work together closely, but also the AEZ, as we kind of pointed out, or as you guys pointed out, it could just be any chain that's an IBC chain that has some business with the hub, whether it be, you know, some protocol on liquidity on Osmosis, or it could be some liquid staking token partnership between two LST chains that maybe aren't even part of the hub, but they give and get value from the hub some way. So I'm very intrigued about how this shakes out. And the more organized and the more articulate it seems to the new user, the more attractive it's going to be. And then eventually, my hope is it gets to the point where Atom, the token, at least in part, represents an index of the chains that are most closely tied to it in some way. I don't think it's going to ever be like, you know, an actual index token. I don't know if that's possible, but where like the new user coming off the centralized exchange with USDC is like, wow, look how big the Cosmos is. It's 400 chains. Let me just buy Atom with half my money right now, and then I'll figure out what to do with the other half of it. And then buying that Atom just adds more security to that AEZ, and there's a somewhat of a flywheel there. That's kind of what I hope eventually happens and what unfolds.
Yeah, I think you like hit the nail on the head that's exactly the intention of the Atom economic zone. I think you're exactly right about that.
Oh, good. So it only took like 3 years and, you know, 175 of these spaces. I've got it. And now hopefully I'll be able to explain it to like my dad or my grandmother in like 10 minutes, right? The articulation piece is important, and that's like the content creator's job, is to not only break it down, but break it down where you don't lose the idea, right? You don't want to just simplify it to where it doesn't make sense anymore, which happens as well. So I really appreciate you guys coming on, and I'll give you each of you like the last word here if you want to just like chime in with something we breezed over, or chime in with something that that you want the users, the listeners to take away. And then I would love to revisit as you guys get closer to launch, of course.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Joe. I really appreciate being on this panel. I love being on here with Brobo and Max. They're great guys. I can't wait to, you know, jump on another meeting with all you guys. But I do want to announce, because I can't believe I waited till the end to say this, but our public testnet launches tomorrow. So everybody is going to be eligible, and it is incentivized. I can talk more about our airdrop maybe the next time that we chat, but
sure.
Especially after we have more discussions with Stride, since we got some things to talk about. But public testnet tomorrow, testnet.ellis.network. It's going to launch at about 3 p.m. UTC. And you'll be able to log in using either your Kepler, your Cosmos Station Leap, or you can use account abstraction. So like a Google account, for example, which is what I'll be doing for testing purposes. Please, we encourage everybody to join in, fulfill all the tasks, if you can follow us on Twitter or on Discord, you'll be able to see whatever tasks need to be accomplished to be incentivized during this testnet, and you'll get a retro drop for that. So I look forward to seeing you all there testing out the web app, and can't wait to get the feedback, and thanks for having me.
Cool. Thanks. Robo, anything else you want to add?
Thanks for having me, and I was really excited to kind of, you know, I got to have a good long meeting with the Ellis guys the other day, and just excited to be back on and learning more. This was actually the first that I had heard that you guys were capping delegations, which is very exciting. People talk about that a lot, but I think you guys are actually the first team to actually do it. So I just, you know, from a governance perspective, want to commend you guys for that. I think it's exceptional. So hoping that more people pick that up as well. It's just been great to be up here and chatting with all of you guys.
And actually, before Max chimes in with the last word at Robo, I wanted to ask you, for the last couple of weeks, are you happy that the other Robo got their Twitter account banned so people don't confuse you guys anymore going forward?
He got banned? Oh no!
Yeah, his personal account got banned, I think, for life. So that's probably better for you.
No, I miss him, and you know, he assures me that his name is Robbo and mine is Robo. So,
oh yeah, that wouldn't make me feel better. But you know, he's on the Rack FM account. But yeah, his personal got banned.
Because I'm sorry to hear that.
When I was in the ecosystem early on, I definitely confused you guys a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, no, I'm actually very sad to hear that. I missed all of his hot takes. So I'll have to go follow the Rack FM account and get my dose of those again.
All right, cool. Max, I'll give you the last word, man.
Awesome. Appreciate it. And yeah, just gonna echo what these guys said. It's just awesome to be up here talking to a bunch of the different builders and I guess people in the space who are trying to work with other teams and, you know, I guess partner to build something a lot bigger than what we have right now in the Cosmos. So appreciate you having me on, Joe, and for coordinating all this. And I guess I'd also say for the shared security to kind of like wrap it all up, it really comes down to trade-offs and what you're looking for. And I think they both have avenues to succeed. So I don't think it's like a necessarily like a versus or a battle. It's more or less just giving options to different teams and different builders for what they're looking for. So I think we're going to have a ton of different successful chains when you look 5-10 years ahead. So I don't think we need to worry really about what's happening amongst ourselves here. And then finally, I'd say just keep an eye out on Archway's Twitter because we're going to be releasing quite a bit of stuff over the next couple of weeks. And yeah, that's probably the best way to see all the leaks and get involved.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, everybody. This is another great space. I'm glad you were able to accommodate my time zone. I always thank people for being able to schedule with me because I know that I have like these slim windows, but I love spaces. I think this is where the party's going to be at when the bull market's in full swing. Already seeing the average listenership grow. This is a great forum, and it's always because the guests are so knowledgeable and able to share this info. So thanks a lot. Hope everybody has a great weekend, a great St. Patrick's Day. Maybe I'll stream like around 5 p.m. on St. Patrick's Day. That'll be great. And but you'll see how I celebrate St. Patty's Day. We'll see. But anyway, have a great one. Thanks again. And I'll definitely be reaching out to you guys to get involved in some future spaces.
You're the best, Joe. And check out Archie's NFT. That's my show. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known a politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss. And I'm liking the odds, fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape and blunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lay stacked and non-toxic just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Eats tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and blunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. spaces.